to try to get into some of the tech here this hour. I am James Lloyd. This is the Apocalypse Chronicles. 2 hours daily. We're on in the mornings live at 9 a.m. Pacific time. That's 12 noon in the east. And we're on satellite and internet in the mornings. And then we run the program again at 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 5 p.m. in the east on 7.385. And we usually only get 1 hour on the afternoon replay. And then at 6 p.m. in the evening, that's 9 p.m. in the east, we run it again on 3 shortwave frequencies. So many of you listen from 9 to 11 Eastern, or 6 to 8 Pacific, or 7 to 9 Central, and so forth. 7 to 9 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Central, and in between those 3 hours. We actually have 3 hours per night on the shortwave, but the third hour is usually the prior show from the day before. So tonight, you'll be able to hear this broadcast again, or if you're listening to it at that time, then you're listening on one of three frequencies, 7.385, which is WRMI in Miami, 9.330, which is WBCQ up in Monticello, Maine, or 7.415, which is WBCQ's other transmitter. So we're on two transmitters out of Maine. That one crisscrosses all the way to Mexico City from Maine.
משטרת בריטניה סירבה להגיב על הדיווח. מאות שוטרים ממשיכים לחקור את התוכנית לפגוע בעשרה מטוסים בדרכם מבריטניה לארצות הברית, ככל הנראה באמצעות חומר נפץ נוזלי. על פי אחד הדיווחים, מצאו שוטרים מזוודה ובה חומרים להכנת מטענים וכימיקלים. עורכת החדשות הילה מרינוב, התחזית הקלה בעומס החום, בעיקר בהרים. ביום ראשון תהיה התחממות והכבדה בעומס החום. ביום שני תהיה התחממות קלה. ביום שלישי תהיה עוד התחממות ויהיה עומס חום כבד בכל האזורים. זה סוף החדשות מכל ישראל.
רשת ב' של כל ישראל. כל החדשות.
רוק קלאסי כאן ברשת בית של כל ישראל עד שש בבוקר בשידור חי תוכנית קייטית קצבית עם המיצב של הקלאסיקה הרוקנרול כמובן תכנית שידור לריטה בלטר קאט כאן איתכם בני דודקט
Είναι η εφημερίδα καταστρώματος. Να σας πω. αναγνωρίσουμε που και αν βρίσκεστε, είτε σε θάλασσα είτε σε στεριά, μια ματιά στα θέματά μας. Πριν πάμε στην πρώτη μας μουσική ανάσα, η Acadia Shipman αναγνωρίζει σύγχρονο στόλο δεξαμένο πλοίων, καθώς βρίσκεται σε εξέλιξη το επενδυτικό της πρόγραμμα. Έχουμε ένα αρκετά μεγάλο θέμα και αρκετά δυσάρεστο. Έχουμε οικολογική καταστροφή στη Μεσόγειο. Πάνω από 50 εκατομμύρια ευρώ είναι το κόστος αντιμετώπισης της πετρελοκυλίδας του Λιβάνου. Μιλήσαμε και στη χθεσινή εκπομπή για το θέμα αυτό. Αυτά θα είναι τα δύο κύρια, θα είναι τα κύρια θέματά μας για σήμερα. Πάμε στην πρώτη μαγαπημαστική ανάθεση και επιστρέφουμε με την οικολογική καταστροφή.
The beacon detainee later died, but David Passaro, a 40-year-old, wasn't charged with his death. The federal jury found him guilty after about 8 hours of deliberations of 3 counts of simple assault and 1 count of assault resulting in serious bodily injury. Passaro was the first American civilian to be charged with mistreating a detainee during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was accused of beating Abdul Wali. The man was being questioned in 2003 about alleged rocket attacks on a remote base where David Passaro was stationed with US and Afghan troops. Prosecutor Jim Caldelmo said Passaro beat Wali mercilessly for 48 hours before he died as he tried to get information about rocket attacks on the Afadabad base in remote northeastern Afghanistan. Prosecutors had charged Passaro with 2 counts of assault with a dangerous weapon with intent to, of bodily harm and 2 counts of assault resulting in serious bodily injury. The jury instead convicted him of lesser charges, an option the judge offered during jury instructions.
And finally, the last article is entitled Inquiry Suggests Files on Killings in Haditha were extinct. They were chosen from the International Herald Tribune. It says, according to two Defense Department officials briefed on the case, a high-level military investigation into the killings of 24 Iraqis in Haditha last November was uncovered instances and uncovered instances in which American Marines involved in the episode appear to have destroyed or withheld evidence. The officials said the investigation found that an official company logbook of the unit involved had been tampered with and that an incriminating video taken by an aerial drone on the day of the killing was not given to investigators until Lieutenant General Peter Charley, the second-ranking commander in Iraq, intervened. According to IHD, those findings contained in a long report that was completed last month but no made public go beyond what has been previously reported about the case. It has been known that Marines who carried out the killings made misleading statements to investigators and that senior officers were criticized for not being more aggressive in investigating the case, in which most or all of the Iraqis who were killed were civilians. But this is the first time details about possible concealment or destruction of evidence has been disclosed. Well, that's the power edition of the U.S. and the World Media. But stay tuned, we have more for you. Thanks for those explained. It's coming up next.
Facts, the claims. Today, shameful debate on Iraq for Now. Kirby Regan, a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, says American leaders claim that if the U.S. pursues the Iraq too soon, Iraq would face greater chaos affecting the entire region. But it is a false claim. American troops are the best excuse for chaos. How about hearing more on this story? Please take that. The debate in the U.S. Senate over the U.S. was misplaced. Americans deserve an honest airing of the most important foreign policy issue facing the U.S. But this congressional circus had little to do with policy and everything to do with election year politics. Democrats look unfortunate, and many Republicans were flat out disappointed. It is surprising why the nose of American governors did not grow a foot when they claimed a recent Army intelligence report proved Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. According to David Cage, the head of the U.S. team that hunted for weapons of mass destruction in 2003 and 2004, these gases by now would be less toxic than most things that Americans have in their kitchen. Their poor condition was affirmed by intelligence officials in a media briefing. But Santorin, the head of the team, insisted that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction that could have reached terrorists. Such silly claims will only bolster the evidence that U.S. intelligence is being manipulated for political reasons. Let's get back to serious business. The debate over a U.S. troop exit. Democrats who want to set a timetable now are wrong. But the Republican taunt that Democrats want to cut and run is purely a product of electioneering, not of security concerns. The White House knows that there is a vigorous debate within the U.S. military over the very issue Democrats raised. Whether keeping more troops in Iraq longer makes the situation worse or better. It was heard both sides argued by top officers in Iraq and inside the Pentagon. As one senior military source put it, the big debate is whether drawing down would make the Iraqis stand up sooner. Some say yes, so long as the United States leaves a substantial force of military trainers and advisors along with air power. A senior officer in Iraq told that there are too many troops here now. It creates dependency and becomes a magnet for attack. This particular officer would like to see troops cut to 80,000 to 90,000 now and 20% to 40% more later this year. American leaders claim that if the U.S. troops leave Iraq too soon, Iraq would sink into greater chaos, affecting the entire region. But it is a false claim. American troops are the best excuse for chaos. Moreover, Iraqi officials from nearly all factions say they want U.S. troops thrown down within 18 months. Iraq's National Security Advisor, Mossad al-Rabi'i, wrote in the Washington Post recently that he expected most of the U.S. troops to return home by the end of 2007. American leaders don't want an explicit timeline. Instead, they favor a so-called roadmap for troop reductions that depends on achieving goals for improving Iraqi security. They want dates, but dates that depend on meeting their targets. Dear listeners, that was facts versus claims. They can calm simple debate on Iraq law. By Trudy Rudin, a columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thank you for listening, and a God bless to you all.
social paralysis in the U.S. This program, Wealthy Should Pay Your Fair Share. John Claybrook, who is president of Public Citizen, which is a national citizen and consumer advocacy group in Washington, D.C., says, opponents of the property tax also claim it inhibits entrepreneurship and punishes those who take risks to succeed. In fact, the vast majority of the U.S. super wealthy families behind the campaign became wealthy through inheritance and untaxed assets, not through their own fortune or innovation. Please stay tuned. Joan Claybrook has more to tell on the problem. As the U.S. Senate considers repealing the federal property tax, senators face an onslaught of attack advertisements about an issue that's critical to the U.S. economic health but has been twisted and perverted like few others. Your choice will be to continue to stand with most Washingtonians on values and priorities or to fall prey to the spin and deception. The U.S. lobbyists, unregulated conservative groups, and the Seattle Times publisher hope to sway the senators with an expensive fear-mongering campaign telling the American public that the property tax will affect almost all of them. They will tell the U.S. public about hard-working families having to sell their parents' farms or small businesses being wiped out in order to pay property tax bills. Those emotion-laden payments would be more persuasive if they were true. In reality, only the wealthiest 0.25% of all people who die in the United States in 2006 will pay any property taxes. That leaves the other 99.7% of the public free to pass on 100% of their assets on tax. The American Farm Bureau, a member of the Anti-Property Tax Coalition, has been unable to cite a single instance where a family was forced to sell its farm because of property tax liability. The same goes for small businesses, which have rarely faced taxation as the discharge rate on the tax has been increased. If you have not heard those statistics before, it is no accident. A recent report published by Public Citizen and United for a Fair Economy shows how a handful of the U.S. super wealthy families quietly have helped finance and coordinate a massive campaign to fool the American public and repeal the property tax. Those 18 families, worth a total of $185.5 billion, have worked mostly in the shadows, but they have names they have heard before: Walton, Gallo, Marsh, and closer to home, Nordstrom and Frank Blutton, publisher of the Seattle Times. Collectively, those families stand to save a total of more than $70 billion if the state tax is repealed. Opponents of the property tax also claim it inhibits entrepreneurship and punishes those who take risks to succeed. In fact, the vast majority of the U.S. super wealthy families behind the campaign became wealthy through inheritance and untaxed assets, not through their own hard work or innovation. The policies advocated by property tax critics conflict with the priorities of Washingtonians. As America faces a ballooning budget deficit and a record national debt, it is irresponsible to provide new tax breaks for the wealthiest citizens. Studies show repeal of the property tax would cost the government roughly 1.5 $1 trillion over the first 10 years, roughly, what it would take to provide health insurance for every uninsured American. Property tax is among the most progressive forms of taxation Americans have. It does not squeeze the rich or punish the successful, but it asks only that the wealthiest among Americans pay their fair share. The repeal of the property tax would only increase the deficit and leave a larger burden on American children and grandchildren. That is bad policy, and it goes against American people. Dear friends, that was social paralysis in the U.S. taken from what they should pay their fair share, offered by Joel Claybrook, president of the U.S. Public System. Thank you for listening, and God bless you all.
This is the Voice of Justice coming to you live from Tehran. It's now time for a quick review of this hour's headlines with me, Mehan Darakhshandeh. Tehran's interim Friday prayers leader, Ayatollah Akbar Hoshami Rafsanjani, has said the Israeli regime and its American backers have incurred a heavy military, political and moral defeat in Lebanon. Rafsanjani stressed that Hezbollah's tough stance and heroic defense was based on legal, moral, ethical and humanitarian values, despite Western propaganda, which tried to portray otherwise. Iran's ambassador to Beirut, Mohammad Reza Shehbani, in a meeting with Lebanese Foreign Minister Fawzi Salih in Beirut on Thursday evening, had condemned the Zionist regime's crimes in Lebanon. The Iranian diplomat also reiterated the need to strengthen mutual relations between Tehran and Beirut and Iran's participation in reconstruction of Lebanon. Shehbani declared the victory of Hezbollah an honor for Lebanon and the entire Arab world. A number of former American senior political and military officials have written a critical letter to George W. Bush, urging him to hold direct and unconditional negotiations with Iran in order to settle bilateral issues. U.S. media reported that 22 former high-ranking American political and military officials slammed the Bush administration's policies towards Iran, especially Tehran's nuclear issues. The ex-officials emphasized that having diplomatic ties with Iran is the best option. And Lebanese army troops are up and prepared to move on Friday to the edge of the Israeli-occupied Sherba farmland. Security sources say Lebanese troops would deploy in the village of Sherba. Israel occupied the farmlands when it seized the Golan Heights from Syria in 1967. Well, dear listeners, we've come to the end of this edition of the Voice of Justice. On behalf of myself, Mehran Darakhshandeh, and all the team here in Tehran, I wish you a very good day.